Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for humanity, climate restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.
It's February 16th, 2016. Amazing how they go together, huh? Well, nothing to it. This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, and we're coming to you live from Lupin Lodge, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked. And we're right here in the Santa Cruz Mountains, just 20 minutes from Santa Cruz, where we were this last Valentine's Day. And I am Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and a few surprises. And I know it's late, but happy Valentine's Day.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day to you. Our show is sponsored by Go Raw, natural food, highly nutritious, and also Universe Spirit, one of the leading forces behind the effort to deal successfully with the impending climate change / possible catastrophe. But on a positive note...
Nothing to it, Errol.
There's nothing to it. Guess what? That's the focus of our program tonight. That phrase just jumped out at me. Nothing to it. So, for example, nothing to it. To what, you might say? Well, the thing that seems most hard to do. I can hear you say, easy for you to say. Well, that's another program. Tonight's conversation, we are going to explore this nothing to it, how we make mountains out of molehills when there's really nothing to it. How things can be easier than we think, as well as the notion that there's really nothing to what we often perceive and judge as really something. Sound like a lot to cover? Well, there's nothing to it. That's because we're going to be speaking our crackerjack couple speak tonight.
Nothing to it.
To probe into the nothingness, which, by the way, is where we hope to find the somethingness later. And if you're stuck in some kind of quagmire or consternation, if every time you want to put something out, you just feel so consternated, no matter how hard you
push.
Sounds
like constipation, Errol.
Well, you just may find out as you listen to our program that there's really nothing to it. So, here we are. What do you got, Rochelle?
I once realized in order to get to the allness, you have to be willing to let go of the somethingness and walk into the nothingness. And then I realized that the allness and the nothingness were the one and the same.
I think we need to break that down as some kind of coherent, particular thing. You always accuse me, by the way, of being abstract.
It's a matter of how much time you spend in the abstract. I mean, one can be abstract every now and then. It makes for variety and fun. But when you're abstract more than sometimes...
So you have to balance out your abstractness.
Yes.
With what?
With the reality that most people seem to believe is reality.
Now, I wouldn't say that's a nothing to it. I'd say that's a lot to it. That's a hard thing to do. Right away, we see we do have categories between nothing to it.
Now you're speaking hard and easy in terms of nothing to it. If it's hard, it does feel like there's something to it. If it's easy, it feels like there's nothing to it. But we're taking it to another level. We're finding the spiritual backbone to nothing.
Not only is it nothing, it's no thing. We pronounce it nothing, but it's no thing. So part of our exploration tonight should include is the whole question about, is there really something there? From some perspectives, it's all an illusion. That's the nothing. I'm going to bring in Professor Umbridge right away on this to see what he might have about the whole nothing to it versus something to it.
Oh, good evening. I'm always glad to engage in a conversation with you tonight. When you have something to it, that means you're making something out of it. And so you need to be very aware who's doing the making of the something. Because that same person who's making it up can also be the person who's the making of the nothing. This is what we can do with ourselves when we sit down and we look at the perspective, the panorama of our life and all its varied activities, and we can go, well, is there a lot to it from a certain point of view, if you're going from one to the other through time and space? But if you step back into the witnessing of what's happening and you see all this commotion, you realize, my Lord, there is nothing to it, actually.
I agree with you, Professor. And sometimes when I'm in the zone, in that place where there's no judgments and there's no fear, I feel I can actually become part of that nothing. In that moment, it's everything. And nothing and everything become one. I like that. I like it a lot because it's very peaceful. I have a lot of energy in those spaces. I'm not in any resistance to anything, so all my energy is just there, and I like it. There's nothing to it. All you have to do is want it.
That's so delightful. And as the bard said, one of his most famous lines, other than to be or I wish I could have been, I think, something like that. To be or, let me think.
No, go ahead. What is the one?
The line is, of course, all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. If you see it as a drama that's acting out the story that you're creating and you happen to be starring in your story, you'll come to appreciate that it's just that. And every story ends. And so this story that you're living out now will end, and then you'll start a new story, a new chapter for you who are the you who's looking at life. And at that point in your awareness, being able to say with authority, ah, nothing to it.
I understand totally, and I think that's what being older gives you an advantage. You have a lot of stories. You know their stories because you've lived them. They're your stories, but you're aware that you're not in that story right now. You're in a different story, and you have all these stories. I think that does something to one's consciousness if one is aware of it. You know, just realizing that the present is just a story as well as all the past stories. That's a lot of freedom.
Let's listen to Karen Reynolds. She's going to validate that point in just a lively and wonderful little way. Because really, as she would say, ain't nothing to it.
Homely looking Earl had a beautiful girl, and she was hanging on the end of his arm. He sure looked funny because he didn't have money, and he never really had any charm. Then I got to thinking that she must have been a drinking, so I asked him how it came to be. He just grinned real wide and pulled me to the side, and this is what he said to me. There ain't nothing to it but to go ahead and do it, so you might as well jump on in. And if you fall, it ain't the end of it all. If you can try, well, you can try again. If you wanna have it, then you're gonna have to grab it. Gotta find it in your heart somehow. There ain't nothing to it but to go ahead and do it, and I think you better start right now. She never had a penny, she was broker than a welfare line. I saw her today and she was happy and gay. She had a necklace like a diamond mine. I had to ask her, honey, how'd you get the money? Did you save it for a rainy day? How'd you get them riches in the pockets of your britches? And this is what she had to say. There ain't nothing to it but to go ahead and do it, so you might as well jump on in. Gotta find it in your heart. apart somehow. There ain't nothing to it but to go ahead and do it, and I think you better start right now. So take yourself a chance if there's something you've been wanting to do. It's not as hard as it seems, and the only thing that's holding you back is you. Guitar, I'm picking on a country song. Have groupies and a bus and all of that stuff, and everybody singing along. I know I can make it, I'm just waiting on my break, and then I'll really be on my way. And when my friends all ask for the key to success, this is what I'll have to say. There ain't nothing to it but to go ahead and do it, so you might as well jump on in. And if you fall, you can try again.
I love it. There ain't nothing to it.
There ain't nothing to it. I know I can speak for myself for times in my life where I've created a barrier arbitrarily. Like I had an opportunity to go once to talk to Cecil Williams, as a matter of fact, a famous minister at Glide Memorial Church. Great man of spirit and man of action. I just blew it off for the most stupid reason, which I'm not going to go into at this time because I would appear, well, stupid.
It's okay. Ain't nothing to it.
Let me tell you that. To be stupid, man, there is really nothing to it.
For some people. For stupid people.
Now, you listeners out there, think about a time in which you could honestly say, I was really stupid. And it's funny now, isn't it, when you think about your stupidity? At the time, it could have led you into fear and horror and shame and all kinds of things. And you could be banging your head and going, I coulda, I shoulda, I woulda. Let's do a little bit of that tonight, Rochelle. We haven't done that in a while. We're going to do a little improv on coulda, shoulda, and woulda. So I'll begin. I coulda.
Yeah, you shoulda.
I woulda.
You coulda.
I woulda.
You shoulda. I could have. I shoulda. I woulda.
I coulda. I shoulda. I woulda. Okay, there you have it. There's all kinds of situations in which you could go through that little riff, as we say, one of those little life riffs where you kind of go into regret.
And self-flagellation. You don't even need a real whip for self-flagellation. All you need is your mind finding things that are so absolutely demoralizing and flinging them at yourself. We humans do that. It's so funny. I've been dropping things this week for some reason. I don't know, but it doesn't matter. The thing is, each time I dropped them, I used an expletive. So much so that when I used the expletive, Errol immediately assumed I dropped something.
Is that right?
Yes. You said, did you just drop something? I said, yes. And you said, well, I heard what you said.
Rochelle had the dropsies. But what's more important is where she got them. And what she paid for them. And can she return them?
And I don't think they sell them at Raw Foods.
No, but they sell them at Ross. Remember the Dropsy Twins when we were little kids and the Dropsy Twins?
Oh, well, you're making all that up.
No, there was these precocious little four-year-old twins and they would solve detecting stories. Well, I mean, in my story, they're the Dropsy Twins.
But don't ask if I remember something that's in your story.
Oh, that's not allowed? Okay.
How could it be allowed? I couldn't get into your story then.
If that's the case, but I'd like to hear from Barney about nothing to it. And Barney, Rochelle and I were talking about nothing to it tonight. You know what we're talking about?
course I know nothing to it. I try and tell my buddies there's nothing to it. They go around and they get stuck in their heads on stuff that's like, it's just some fantasy of their own manufacturer. There's nothing to it. My friends are all in the same manufacturing business. They're in the manufacture of making something to it that's really nothing to it. And they do it all the time. And as a result, they end up getting frustrated and mad, and they take it out on other people, and they become gangsters and very undesirable people to be with, which is why they call them the undesirables. Which is different than the untouchables.
Very funny.
Or the negligibles, by the way. I don't know if you ever saw that program. We used to watch the negligibles.
Oh, you weren't making that up, Barney.
No. We had the negligibles. It was about this family that they were always just kind of negligent about things. They didn't do the dishes. They didn't clean the floor. They didn't treat each other with respect. They were the negligibles. And we used to watch them every week. And we learned a lot of lessons watching. And we learned that there is nothing to it to be a negligible. It takes a little more something to be a edgeable, which is the opposite of negligible. Edgeable.
Barney.
What?
There's nothing to you that can be made better with just a kiss.
Well, what would you say about it, though? People who are negligent.
I'm not going to get into that story. It's too weird.
All right, Rochelle. Well, you're going to be that way. What do you want to say?
I want to ask you a question. I want to know what it is.
Oh, it? Well, there's nothing to that either. When you think of anything, that's an it. Nothing to it. Anything you can think of is an it. It's all it. Oh, I want to ask Professor Umbridge. You were talking about Martin Buber. What was that, a book? Oh, yes, of course. The Eye Thou. Yeah, that was it, the Eye Thou book. What was that about, the difference, he said, between the it and the now? Oh, well, of course, the very marked difference and very significant. The it is when you relate to something as if it were a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
And the thou, when you relate to someone or some phenomena as an end in itself, that you're having with them, and you are totally immersed in the moment with each other, that you recognize the amazing personal beingness that is before you, and that's the thou. And as they say, you know, friends having together, where did the time go? Quickest way to lose time is to be in the thou and to be with a good friend where the exchange is so fluid and there are such respect and non-resistance between the two of you that you're veritably transporting yourself into the very heavenly embrace.
Which is nothing.
It depends whether you go in the front door or the back door.
Okay, Professor. I think of the it as being more finite. Anything that's temporal is the it. And so there is nothing to anything that's temporal. There's nothing to it because it's always disappearing. If you looked over a timeline of a long time and you were able to compress it into a very small time, you'd see that that which was in this side of now is gone on that side of now.
That's why we have to flip a coin.
Don't think so, but
to see which side of the now we end up on.
We're talking about you being silly. No, we were talking about you being stupid. No, but you're not really stupid. You're just more silly and you're stupid.
Okay, that's good. My wife says I'm more silly than I am stupid. So great, I'm ahead of the game. Because last week, she said to me, you are so stupid, more than you are silly, actually.
I did not say that. You see, he's making things up tonight. So I'm just saying that he's silly. But.
What?
But. Stupid is as stupid does.
Really?
Remember we had that horrible scam that we lost huge amounts of money in? We came out of it saying that I was a stupid idiot and you were a naive bumpkin. And we laughed because that's what we were. And it was funny to us. And I remember telling it to other people. They would try to protect me. Well, you're not stupid. You know, you're not a stupid idiot. they just wanted to make me feel better or something. And I'd say, it's nothing to be a stupid idiot.
Nothing to it.
There's nothing to it. Don't give it any meaning. It's nothing. You just do things that are stupid.
Well, how can you be alive and actually in existence if you don't do stupid things? Because when you do stupid things, you have a juxtaposition of those things that are not stupid, but that are, I want to say, bright. We're getting brighter and brighter the more mistakes we learn from. And that helps us to be really kind and aware. Nothing More was the name of that song, Alternate Routes. It really kind of sums it up. But this was a line that jumped out at me. The dangers in the anger and the hanging on to it, to be bold, to be brave. It is the thinking that the heart can still be saved and the darkness can come quick. The dangers in the anger and the hanging on to it.
I've been reading this book about Julius Caesar and the beginnings of his rise to power. He's fighting a battle. He's talking about how all their training came before this, readying them for this moment, and now they can't be led by the emotions. Emotions like you see people coming at you, people getting killed, and you could be just out of it. But the thing is, all you know is that you have this skill, and this is what your intent is, to absolve the enemy, and you go for it.
I don't think that's the word. To absolve them would mean to, like, release them from their guilts and responsibilities.
Well, if you kill them, you probably much did that.
They will have been absolved. I love that because it allows me to use the pluperfect tense.
Oh, God.
When was the last time you remember talking about the pluperfect tense?
All I know is I needed some extra courses. Didn't even matter what I got on the courses. And I chose grammar or grammar. Anyway, it was the only course I failed in college. I couldn't wrap my mind around pluperfects and preperfects and afterperfects or anything. It was like learning a foreign language to me, even though it was my language, it was English grammar.
Well, when you think about the phrase pluperfect, that's like, if you didn't know it was referring to a tense, and you just said, for example, a pluperfect just was seen across the horizon. There's a pluperfect in aisle 4. There's a pluperfect that applied for a job with our company today. See, there's all kinds of ways of
whatever.
Pluperfect.
There's nothing to it.
So as long as there's nothing to it, let's ask Father O'Malley what he might share with us about nothing to it. What'd he say, Father?
Oh, sure, it is good here. And there's so much that we want to make to it. And it's not a bad idea. Lots of times you say to someone, we'll get to it, and it's the right thing to do, even though you know that there's nothing to it, but you still got to get to it in order for you to get on your way to realizing that there's nothing to it. For example, let's say, you've got a problem to solve, and it's important to solve. Something's going to be not feeling very good if you don't solve it. Yep, indeed, you better get to it. But once you engage the problem, of course, and that's part of the real stuff of life is engaging the problems and working toward the solution. And then when you look back on a problem that was a difficult thing to do and you see how easy it was, from that perspective of the future, you could really say, nothing to it. But when you're getting to it, it seems like a lot to it.
I was thinking of something that may or may not have anything to do with what we're talking about, but something about you were taking a pluperfect on the horizon is what triggered it all. There was a rainbow. I got out of my car in front of Trader Joe's. As I got out of the car, there was this rainbow in the sky. I was awestruck. After I was looking at it for a long time, because, you know, rainbows, they sometimes disappear too quickly. I looked, and very few people were looking at it. I mean, you'd think, how often do you see rainbows here? You don't see them very often.
They hadn't just been in a traffic accident while looking at it like yourself.
There it is. Woo! It's just beautiful. And I think that line, take time to smell the roses, or take time to appreciate rainbows. We don't do that. And there are daffodils out right now.
Well, we're busy. We're adults. I remember asking someone who has a difficult time, a very dear friend, but he has a difficult time owning his own desires. Let's just say that. One time I said to him, well, what do you want? And you know what he did? He looked at his watch.
What did he say after he looked at his watch?
I don't know. I don't think he knew what to say. He didn't know what he wanted. And what that said to me is that this is a person whose life is ruled by time and appointments and obligations and responsibilities and much to do. Buried in that somewhere, there was something he may have wanted to do that was independent of all that, that was unique to him, but he was at a point in his development where that didn't seem to be an option.
He wasn't aware that there was nothing to it.
Right. We create these artificial systems of judgment that we have to have this so that we will feel this, and then they will regard me as this. And then if they regard me as this, I will feel like a good this, a important this. So I hope they see me as this, but they may not, and that scares me. So I have to anticipate how I can get them to see me in the way that I need to be seen in order to feel safe as who I am. That scenario.
I'm going to have nightmares about that scenario.
If you sprinkle salt on your pillow just before you go to bed, you won't have nightmares.
Who told you that?
I don't remember.
You made that up, didn't you?
You almost got caught in it, didn't you?
I did. For 1 second, I thought maybe that was real. I mean, not real in the real sense of real, but some like old wives' tale that you might have heard. I had a neighbor when I was growing up. She used to say dasn't instead of mustn't. Dasn't.
Dasn't. I love that.
You dasn't do that.
How do you spell dasn't?
I guess D-A-S-N parstrophe T.
Okay.
Anyway, she would do certain things and then she'd sprinkle salt over her shoulder to keep away the bad luck. Man, that woman had a salt shaker, and she used it a lot. She used it a lot, and I remember watching that as a child thinking, that was so amazing. Why is she doing that?
Imagine you have a whole group of people, let's say they're in an office building, and they all believe that.
And walk around with salt
wait
shakers.
A minute, they all have salt, and they come out for lunch, and you see 100 people throwing salt over their shoulder.
Maybe turn it into a cult, the salt over shoulder cult.
That's a great idea for a cult. You know, I don't think we have one of these.
And there'll be proof. The minute you do it, there'll be people telling you all the wonderful things that happened to them as a result of pouring salt over it. And all of a sudden, there'll be testimony. Be constant testimony of, and I threw the salt over my shoulder, this happened.
But they'll be able to say even more so the things that didn't happen.
That's right.
They threw the salt over each other, and that giant she-wolf that was bounding out of the forest didn't jump on me and eat me.
See? That's another thing. There's nothing to it, just a little salt and a shaker.
Here we go. Well, there is nothing to it. Featuring Sheryl Crow with the Julius Jr. Garage Band. I think she summed it up. Having said that, I would like to raise a challenge. Tonight's challenge is if you send in $25, Nelma Riddle from Topeka, Kansas will meet your $25 in a matching grant.
Don't say this. He's making it up. It's a story. He's creating a skit. So don't send in $25.
Rochelle actually believes that, A, I'm making these things up, and B, that she has to let you know, listener out there of Inside Out, the Naking Truth, that I'm making it up, lest you believe that these are true and think of me in these ways of having said these idiotic things that are... he believes are true. I don't know if this is true, but it's something I want to discuss tonight. It has to do with something that's very current. And it'll be interesting to see when we do a radio show several months from now what will have happened. And that is the Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and all those people who are running for office. What's interesting about it is that the millennials, ages 18 to 35, I think, are the majority of the electorate. However, they're not interested in it. They don't believe in the political system. They're disaffected. So they're not voting. Most of them, like 70%, aren't involved. Having said that, I would like to ask Senator Beauregard if you would care to come in and help with this. It seems like it's really a problem. What would make them become involved? Happy to be here tonight. This is Tex Beauregard, and I've given this a lot of thought. Tell you what I'll do is I'll cut right to the chase. Y'all out there that are in that age group, and the others, you can listen in. It won't hurt you either, but this is what I'm going to tell you. You have to think about the kind of leaders you want, and then you have to raise them. What I'm saying is, if you're not having the kind of leadership you want, and you don't feel it's effective, for example, if you think it doesn't really matter who's president, because there's still this ongoing gridlock and this very strong partisan hostility and resistance going on, and you have to try and get some program through this Congress as if that's the way to do it, to get some program through the government and have the government sanctify or run whatever the program is. In order to do that, you'd have to be an exceptional, slippery kind of person to move around in that system. That is so complex. But the question I'll ask of you, though, is can the governmental system solve the problems that upset us in the first place? Let me just read this to you. Throughout most of American history, the old were the poorest age group in the population. Today, that unhappy distinction belongs to young adults and their children. The generations hardest hit by the harsh new normal of stagnant incomes, a shrinking middle class, cheap labor abroad, smart robots at home, rise in inequality, and stalled upward mobility. If that's what it looks like to you, what we'd like to help you with is how do you get to where you can look back, having resolved these issues, and say, nothing to it. We figured it out. We did it. And that's what the human part is about, and that's why we want to try and give you some information on how you can do this. And that's, think of the leaders you need, the qualities they possess, and then educate and raise your children to express those qualities. Because they all got them. Most all these little children have qualities of some kind of leadership. They all got some kind of talent. And the wise person of your generation is going to do whatever it takes to support them expressing their talent. Because where they're talented is where their leadership will be forthcoming. Well, thank you, Senator Beauregard.
Sounds like he's running for office.
I think he is running for office. Senator, how fast are you running? Oh, I run every day. I can do like a mile in about 7 minutes, which is pretty good when I, on a good day, you know, when I'm not stumbling along wearing the weight of the world on my shoulder. Because that considerably slows me down.
You do believe there's nothing to it. That won't be so weighty.
I have moments.
I do too.
And then there are moments when it just seems like an unsolvable problem. But that's when I have to remind myself to, well, to smile.
Smile, though your heart is aching. Smile, even though it's breaking. When there are clouds in the sky, you'll get by. if you smile through your fear and sorrow. Smile, and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through. If you just light up your face with gladness, hide every trace of sadness, although a tear may be ever so near, that's the time you must keep on trying. Smile, what's the use in crying? You'll find that life is still worthwhile if you just smile.
That was Melody Gardot, Smile, written by Charlie Chaplin.
That's what I thought. I was going to ask you who wrote that, because I thought it was him.
You can do it. There are times, I learned that as an actor, when you don't feel like smiling, well, nothing to it. You can do it. I remember I had fallen in love with this girl, and she rejected me. I was in college, you know, and easily knocked about by those romantic and sexual lustful urges.
Didn't change much.
Well, you know, we try and maintain. Anyway, I was very sad and depressed about it, but I had to go on stage. I was playing the Rainmaker in the musical 110 in the Shade. And it's kind of a Burt Lancaster, big character that's positive no matter what. And I did it. See, as an actor, I knew I had to do it.
Well, the guy you were playing wasn't sad.
Exactly. But in doing that, because I was sufficiently motivated, I saw there was nothing to it but to make the choice given sufficient motivation.
When we realize that there's nothing really to our emotional body, it's like the clouds, the waves, they go away, they come back, they're there all the time, they're totally ephemeral. But we give it so much power. We give that body of us so much power. We can hold on to it, like that thing that you hold on to, the anger, that's when it's not good. If you hold on to any of those emotions, they just stay with you. But they'll just go if you let them go. If you realize there's nothing to it, they just go away. They come back, but they go away. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's nothing to it. There's just emotions, period.
That's true. Rabbi, oh, glad you're here. You had something to do? Well, I was out doing things that I knew there was nothing to do, but I have a compulsive nature, so I still do them. Just because you know better doesn't mean you do better. That's one thing I learned, that it's nothing to do, but there's everything to think about it before you know do it. So you're busy thinking, and then there's the doing, and sometimes the thinking gets in the way of the doing, and sometimes the doing gets in the way of the thinking. And if you want to be like Solomon the Wise, and you can look at this side and you can look at that side and says, why don't you get along, learn how to cooperate? The thinking and the doing part of you. And indeed, that's one of the signs of a maturing personality. God forbid we should mature when we can stay infants forever and be blinded by what's going on and stay in one of the most popular places that you can go, a resort. It's called denial. Not to be confused with the river. It's the denial of the place where you go and you don't have to see anything that's not liking you or don't like it happening, and you can just stay in denial for like all your life if you want. It's free.
Rabbi, there's a very thin line between denial and nothing to it.
A thin line? Oh, what's the thin line?
If you're in denial, there is nothing to it. Nothing is going on. That's denial. And the reality that there's nothing to it may have a different feeling and everything around it. But the truth is that the same thing happens.
But either way, you can get there. You know, I hadn't thought of it like that.
Take your trip on denial?
Yeah, take denial. Sometimes it's the best thing to do. Now that you see it that way, I see that you want to get to nothing to it.
Of course, the problem with denial is that the thing that you're denying at some point is very likely to come up and bite your tuchus.
At that point, when it rears its head, then you'll be at the point where you're so aware that you know it can't bite your tuchus because there's nothing to it.
But you say to it, I thought we left you in denial. What are you doing here now in my face, you bad thing that I didn't want to look at? I left you there. I left instructions for those of you who were there to keep you there, okay? I said to them, no matter how much it wants to present itself as being true and real, I gave them special paint. It's denial paint. And when you paint over the phenomenon that you don't want with this kind of gauzy paint, sparkly stuff, it lasts you for about 10 minutes through your denial. And then you have to try something else, of course.
All right. The most important thing would be to say, what are we denying?
Here's one of the things that I think it is. It's about fear of loss.
Nothing's good that yours is bad. The heat goes on and it drives you mad. Scornful thoughts that fly your way, you should turn away, 'cause there's nothing more to say. So hard you were a slave. After all you gave, there was nothing left to say. You've got nothing left to lose.
You've got nothing left to lose.
Oh, you've got nothing left to lose.
Who wanna be standing in your shoes?
You read the book, turn on the page. You change your life in a thousand ways. The dawn of reason lights your eyes. With the key you realize, to the kingdom of the wise. Nothing gained. No more lingering doubt remains. Nothing sacred or profane. Everything to gain, 'cause you've nothing left.
'Cause you've got nothing left to use. The Alan Parsons Project.
To lose.
Nothing left to lose.
Except your mind.
Freudian slippage happening down here. You know, when you graduate from a psychoanalysis school, they give you a Freudian slip. That's
Please, that's so bad.
I wanted to barf as the word was, because
it
was so bad. I should have barfed instead. I'm sorry. I take it back. Alan Parsons Project. How many times have I got to tell you? So two times.
I long for the times when I have nothing to lose and there's nothing to it. And they come, but not as much as I'd like. But I'm working on it. Those times are so magical. That sense of freedom, I really like it.
They just put me in housekeeping here at Lupin Resort where I live. That means I get to clean the bathrooms. And it was so interesting. It was so much fun. I was so grateful that I had the capacity to be able to clean the bathroom. And when I walked out and turned around, and I beheld the clean bathroom, and I had the beautiful, lovely Kate, one of the tenants who lives here, walk by, and she says, "It even smells good." Ah, I felt like that was good. I did a good thing. Now, there would have been a time in my life where I might have cringed at you knowing that I'm the housekeeper because I had something to lose. That something to lose was I had an image of myself as being special in a particular way. But since I've learned that I am special as a housekeeper,
Special in a different way.
Right. And it's just as special and feels just as good to accomplish the job. When someone say to me, "How would a guy your age do something like that?" And I go, "You know, there's nothing to it."
It's also the identity we have about with what we do rather than who we are. When we start to identify with the things we do in our society, things that you do are on a Jacob's ladder, the hierarchy of what you do, which is nothing, and make money. That's the highest thing you can do, which is nothing. And you get money. Then the lowest thing you can do is work with excrement.
There was some excrement in the toilet today.
Well,
very little.
I'm sure there would have been.
But I love they have that little bottle of stuff. I don't know what it's called. And you just spray it in the toilet bowl. And they got these brushes next to the toilet. And you just scrub it out. And then it leaves a blue, bubbly stuff in its wake.
Cleaning something to me is so satisfying. So I always love washing dishes. When I go to friends' house, they don't let me. I love it because there is a dirty dish, and within seconds, it's a clean, sparkling dish.
I know. It satisfies the part of me that wants immediate gratification.
Yes, and there's nothing to it.
As long as you have the energy, and that's what I give thanks for, that I have the energy and I know how to do it. I know how to squirt the mirror, the Windex, and wipe it off with paper. And I know how to sweep the place so the dirt goes outside. These are skills that I'm very proud of.
You're also crazy, but that's okay.
No, this is good. And I'm just glad that I can still do it and find the joy and satisfaction in it and be able to tell someone, "Well, you know, how was it cleaning the Johns?" And I can say, "Nothing to it." Of course, there haven't been a lot of really dirty, dirty people here lately. And sometimes there are, and then it probably might be something to it.
They give you masks. You don't have to smell anything.
We've been talking about Nothing to It. We are sponsored by Go Raw and Universe Spirit. You can get Go Raw, go shop for it in Safeway, Trader Joe's, Costco. Go to universespirit.org and find out about how you can participate in this whole challenge we have with environment degradation because of the climate change. And we're going to say goodnight. So before we leave you, Rochelle, what do you want to say to these folks?
Well, I want them to remember that resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.
Nothing to it.
Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for Humanity, Climate Restabilization.
Come visit universespirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.